Hello, welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa with the News Gazette, dated July 9th, 2025. Today on the front page is a really big picture of a man rolling a huge tire through the dirt with the heading, Rolling Around in the Dirt. Corey Heath participates in the tire bowling competition Tuesday during the Fisher Fair's Redneck Rumble today with Children's Day at the fair with a bicycle giveaway scheduled for 10:30 a.m. at the fairgrounds commercial building. The fair continues through Saturday. And also at the top of the page, we have an article from Champaign County Government from Urbana by Jana Wersema with the title, Strike Off, Tentative Deal Reached with AFSCME. Contract includes 3% raises, insurance benefit boosts, and must clear board in the union. After several months of negotiation, there seems to be light at the end of the tunnel for Champaign County and its employee union, and not a moment too soon. The county announced that at 8:45 p.m. Tuesday that it had reached a tentative deal with AFSCME Council 31 Local 900 for a new contract, which will need approval from both the bargaining unit and the county board. Emily Rodriguez, chair of the board's labor committee, confirmed that the union's previously announced strike, which had been set to begin today, has been called off. The committee is proud to have reached a tentative agreement after a long negotiation process, she said. We have arrived at a brave proposal that significantly increases our commitments and bonuses to our employees. In this time of uncertainty, we seek to ensure our county that it is a place where good work can be done with dignity. The tentative agreement includes the following. A 3% salary increase for fiscal year 2025 retroactive to January 1st, 2025, with a $3,000 bonus. A 3% salary increase for fiscal year 2026. A 5% reduction in health insurance premium costs for fiscal year 2025. Protections against the rising cost of health care for fiscal year 2026, reducing the cost of health insurance premiums for employee dependents, $110 for children, and $250 for spouses, and $300 for family, 12 weeks of paid parental leave, an additional floating holiday. The union previously announced late Monday night that it would go on strike today if a new deal could not be reached before then. work in nearly every county department, including the jail, coroner's office, courthouse, highway department, animal control, and the Brookings Administrative Center. According to Anders Lindahl with AFSCME, about 150 county employees are part of the local bargaining unit. He told the News Gazette that county employees formed their union in 1997 and have never gone on strike before. AFSCME members are currently working under a contract that expired at the end of 2024. We appreciate the hard work of the negotiators on both sides, the assistance of the federal mediator, and especially the solidarity of AFSCME members that secured this fair agreement, said Natalie Nagel, a staff representative with AFSCME Council 31. The union said that the deal came after over 8 hours of negotiations Tuesday that were delayed when the mediator experienced technical difficulties and decided to drive from Chicago to Champaign-Urbana in lieu of meeting with both parts virtually. Also on the front page, an article from Champaign Schools by Jeff D'Alessio, consultant presents his findings on special ed program. If he's heard it once, the consultant hired to audit all things special education in Unit 4 has heard it dozens of times, from parents, from school board members, from advocates, from district employees past and present. Repeatedly, this consultant has heard a similar refrain. I have been in Unit 4 for a long time, and I hope that this project will lead to meaningful improvements because the work of special education is important for our students and our community, Dan Cates wrote in a 90-page report. That work took a step forward Tuesday night when the $375-an-hour Bloomington, Indiana-based former school psychologist and administrator presented presented a summary of his findings and recommendations at a special meeting of the Champaign School Board. The months-long audit, during which Cates led close to 30 group listening sessions, surveyed parents and staff, and conducted one-on-one interviews with stakeholders of all kinds, came to about as the result of a settlement agreement between the district and board members Amy Armstrong and husband Andy over the treatment of their nonverbal daughter with profound disabilities. Everyone who was involved was extremely committed to seeking improvement, Kate said. That includes district officials, who granted him and Northbrook-based attorney Neil Tackiff unfettered access. The audit exposed shortcomings. Students received grades of F or D at a higher rate than their non-disabled classmates, highlighted decisions that led to destabilizing outcomes, former Superintendent Sheila Boozer's overhaul of special education administrators in 2003, and offered recommendations, more than 100, were delivered to the board in March and covered in the report. It's not a quick fix, Kate warned. You're going to be finding your way for 3 years, and then you'll know what needs to be tightened and what you got right, what you got wrong. By that time, there will be a foundation for knowing this is working, this is not working. Cates and Tackiff touched on several of the recommended next steps during Tuesday's meeting, among the meaningful and needed improvements: training, professional development, and more training and professional development, and not the kind that's been made available to date, frustrated paraprofessionals told Cates. He said one common complaint was training offered at the 300,000-foot level instead of the 10-foot level. Please bring us training that talks about interventions rather than talking about what is autism. We bring in these trainers and they tell us this is what autism is, and they describe the clinical profile, the general global profile. That is not the same as individualized interventions that can help from actual people with autism expertise. That's what they're seeking. Tackiff went on to share the results of a survey of staff, 74% of whom said they disagreed or strongly disagreed with the statement. I received adequate opportunities for professional development related to the needs of students with disabilities. Asked by Amy Armstrong about training, Kate said, there are ongoing trainings that are occurring. It's my opinion that those can be better effecticized. They can be more efficient, and they can be more meaningful to people. Autism should be number one priority. Generally speaking, Kate said, incomplete programming is the primary underlying source of a lot of complications in Unit 4. The lack of it has reached a critical point of destabilizing staff morale, he added. His report cited the 2023 disbanding of the district's autism team, and Kate called for the immediate focus being improving and expanding quality programming for students with autism. At Tuesday's meeting, he applauded Unit 4 Special Education Executive Director Suzanne Meislin for quick action in creating transitional kindergarten classrooms for staff of the 2025-26 school year. The lack of the latter was one of the most frequent frustrations shared by parents of Unit 4's youngest children. As Kate notes in his report, this consultant repeatedly heard from staff members that professionals at Champaign Early Childhood Center have attempted to communicate special notice regarding the growing number and severity of students with significantly challenging behaviors who will exit the CECC program and enter Unit 4 elementary schools each year. Despite these forecasts and communications, he went on to write, the district has implemented few alterations or adjustments to its administrative process to support the receiving kindergarten teachers and elementary schools serving these students in the next school year. That, Kate said, means about 50 students with significant needs leave CECC yearly with insufficient planning or communication. Unit 4 has a special education leadership development program that needs fixing. In this report, Kate cited the district's lack of any recognizable vision or initiative to develop leadership within its special education arena, adding almost universally across the 100 or so special educators and related services personnel with whom I met, people stated little to no interest in pursuing leadership roles in special education. The district issued individualized education programs, or IEPs, are lacking one critical element. Nowhere in documents that can be as long as 40 pages is there a meaningful summary, Kate noted, sharing a concern he heard from families. Adding training for parents on IEPs, which Mieslin said is in its early stages, was also among the consultant's recommendations. Special education should fall under the umbrella of teaching and learning, not on the island it's been on for 2 years. After all, Kate said, it's like a district unto itself. Given the size of the dedicated staff, which is 525, the number of students, about 1,775, across 13 disability categories, and the fact that services are available in 19 district buildings, but perhaps ought not be given that all 19 don't have properly trained, qualified personnel. Cates dinged the 2023 decision to transform the district's special education administrative team of 12, which caused a lot of supportive presence in the schools, services, and professional knowledge. Added Armstrong, the dismantling of the department in the spring of 2023, along with separating one of the most critical circular departments in the district from teaching and learning, was a crushing blow to our students, family, and staff. Don't forget about transportation, which Kate said too often gets the short shrift. As the consultant put it, students with disabilities start and end their day on a school bus. The bus drivers, the bus aides, they're the ones who have the students first and have the students last. Those are such critical roles, they can be easily overlooked. Kate's advice for school board members, stay out of the way. Just let them have a chance to get a running start at this, he said in response to a question about how the board could help, asked by President Tony Bruno. They're the ones who are on the street level. They're the ones who are actually working with the students, their teachers, their paraprofessionals. They're remarkable groups of people. They know our kids. Our work becomes to hand them the capacities to be able to do the things for their kids. Continuing on the front page from Social Services by Dave Hinton, Family Service and Stefik Center beginning to consolidate operations. Move follows loss of RSVP thanks to federal funding cuts. Local organizations that serve senior citizens are having to get creative to retain some of those offerings. The Retired and Senior Volunteer Program has ended due to the loss of federal AmeriCorps grant funds, but another local not-for-profit organization is stepping up to fill the gap. Family Service Executive Director Nicole Dowling said the loss ended 52 years of RSVP funding. The RSVP program has been located in the Stefik Senior Center, 2102 Windsor Place in Champaign. Said Dowling, the staff that operated RSVP also ran the Stefik Senior Center. I reached out to the Stefik Center board and asked if they would be open to moving the center to family service because we had a portion of our building not being used. Board members agreed, and renovation work is ongoing to house the former Stefik Center operations in Family Services headquarters at 405 South State Street in Champaign. And there's a picture of Nicole Dowling, Family Service Center's executive director, looking Monday at a newly renovated office area in the Champaign Center that's being transformed into a home for the Stefik Senior Program. Said Stefik Center Board President Tracy Nally, the Stefik Senior Center has been an institution in Champaign County for decades. By moving to family service, it will be more centrally located. more easily accessible, and more versatile, more inclusive. Dowling said that when the RSVP grant was lost, close to 60,000 volunteer hours were lost between Champaign and Douglas counties. We have over 400 volunteers who worked with over 100 volunteer sites between the two counties. Dowling said the relationship between the center and family service goes back to 1980s. The Stevic Center, named for the family that owned and operated the News Gazette for 100 years, also operates a program called Food for Seniors, a program that provides between 160 to 180 seniors in Champaign County with a bag of groceries, which goes to seniors who often don't have enough food stamp benefits or who just don't have enough food for them to get through, Dowling said. Every 2 weeks, a volunteer takes a bag of groceries out to the residents, she said. While the RSVP program no longer exists in name, it does still exist in spirit. It is now called Family Service Volunteer Program and will continue to have volunteers serve programs that align with the mission at Family Service that touch older adults and seniors. Some of the sites formerly served by RSVP will continue with the same volunteers. With the loss of federal funding, Family Service is seeking donations from the community to assist with the renovations to its facility and to pick up the financial responsibilities formerly funded through RSVP. Available to seniors visiting the new Stevic Senior Center at Family Service will be both aging service navigation and mental health / reducing social isolation services. Aging Services Navigation helps seniors access resources to make independent living easier. Services provided to Champaign County seniors by Family Service include Meals on Wheels, volunteer transportation, senior information services, caregiver support, and reducing social isolation through Creativity on Wheels. The latter program seeks to reduce isolation in part by a volunteer delivering a box each month, which items ranging from art supplies to a list of questions the recipient can reflect on. We did one to tell your story, Dowling said. They could go back and journal and talk about their life. Volunteers call on the seniors and talk about the box and check on how they're doing. They could have conversations with a senior that might be not only friendly, but they can get a call from someone that week as well, Dowling said. Not all family service offerings are for senior citizens. The organization also provides mental health counseling for individuals starting at age 10. Champaign County residents who would like to contribute to this project can visit fam-servecc.org/support-stevic. Sounds like a worthy cause. Continuing on in our communities, an article in Section A4 from Urbana by Luke Taylor. Area police Urbana man arrested following shooting and car crash. An Urbana man was arrested after he allegedly fired a gun while driving and fled before getting involved in a crash. Champaign police were dispatched to the area of Bloomington Road and North Prospect area in Champaign at 2:59 p.m. today for a report of a road rage incident involving a firearm. Officers learned that a driver had pointed and fired a weapon at a victim in traffic. No one was struck by the gunfire, and the officers worked quickly to identify the route of the vehicle. It was located at Green and First Streets, but fled from a traffic stop. At 3:07 p.m., the vehicle crashed at the intersection of Lincoln Avenue and Green Street in Urbana. Two individuals were transported to a hospital from the scene of the crash, including the driver of the fleeing vehicle. After evaluation at the hospital, the 65-year-old James White was arrested on charges including aggravated discharge of a firearm, aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, aggravated driving under the influence, and aggravated fleeing and eluding. And there is a picture at the bottom of the page of a pretty nasty car crash there with a vehicle driven by road rage suspect allegedly fleeing a traffic stop Tuesday at Green and First Street in Champaign and then involved in a crash minutes later at Green and Lincoln in Urbana. Also from Urbana by Luke Taylor, Champaign police chase. Man gets 11 years for incident that shut down school. A Rantoul man who was arrested in an incident that led to a soft lockdown at a Champaign elementary school has pleaded guilty to unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon. Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson said that Anthony Wilkins, 30, was originally charged with a count of armed habitual criminal due to prior convictions. However, it was determined that one of his prior convictions did not qualify for that Class X felony, so the charge was reduced to unlawful possession of a weapon, a Class 2 felony. Wilkins' prior included aggravated battery and unlawful possession of a weapon. At around 3:05 p.m., October 31, 2024, Champaign police officers stopped a vehicle at the 2000 block of North Market Street after observing an armed individual getting inside. The vehicle fled from the stop, Champaign police said, and officers pursued it until he stopped due to a reported mechanical failure on the 1000 block of North 6th Street. Four subjects wearing black clothing ran from the car on foot in different directions, Larson said. Three of them were eventually apprehended as multiple local law enforcement agencies assisted in the search. They included Wilkins as well as a 26-year-old William Laws and 29-year-old Trevoy Fonville, both of Champaign. Larson said Wilkins was located walking down Eads Street. He ran from officers, jumped two fences, and had to be tased, according to Larson, after which police located a loaded Glock 23 pistol on his person. Because of its proximity to this incident, Booker T. Washington STEM Academy was placed on soft lockdown until 3:55 p.m., and dismissal was delayed until Champaign police said it was all clear. Wilkins pleaded guilty to the unlawful possession charge on Tuesday, and as part of the negotiated plea, was sentenced to 11 years in prison. He has credit for 250 days previously served. Laws and Fonville's cases have yet to be resolved. Laws' charges include two counts of felon possession and use of a firearm, two counts of armed habitual criminal, and one of obstruction of a peace officer. He has been detained since his arrest and is due next in court July 23rd for a pretrial hearing. Fonville's charges include two counts of aggravated fleeing the police and one of obstruction of a peace officer. He has also been detained since his arrest and is scheduled for a bench trial by Champaign County Judge Matt Lee on July 29th. From Danville by Jennifer Bailey, David S. Palmer Arena. Board seeking new hockey ice lease proposals. With the Danville Dashers hockey team agreement with the David S. Palmer Arena ending in April and the team no longer a tenant, the arena board is seeking a new hockey ice lease. The arena's board of directors on Monday voted to issue a request for proposal to accept sealed bids for a hockey ice lease beginning with the 26-27 season. The arena in April announced the Dashers were leaving, effectively immediately. The Dashers have been an integral part of the arena's sports programming, bringing excitement and community spirit to Danville. Their presence has been marked by numerous memorable games and events, including their celebrated league championship in 2017, a statement then read. We have greatly valued our partnership with the Dashers hockey team, said Kim Hoffman, chair of the arena's board of directors. Their departure marks the end of an era, but we are optimistic about the future and the new opportunities that lie ahead for both the arena and the Dashers. In addition, Don Kernan, commissioner of the Federal Prospects Hockey League, earlier this year thanked the community for its support. While this decision was challenging, we believe that there remains great opportunity for hockey growth and success at the arena and the Danville community, he stated. A Dashers representative could not be reached for comment. The team, which finished its 2024-25 season in last place, two regulation wins and 49 losses, had reportedly been looking for a new owner. Also, Arena General Manager Terry Gaffney said, other events should be coming up. We're working on some local entertainment in the fall, and the announcement on that will be coming soon. We are also working on some family fun events for 2026, Gaffney said. The board on Monday also approved declaring certain property as surplus and authorizing those items for sale or auction. There's a large picture on one page dedicated to Where the Sky Comes Alive, which is the 2025 Balloons over Vermilion. And this festival will take place July 11th to July 12th. Also, given the pilot roster, field positions, and sponsors of the various balloons, there's a schedule which takes place at 3 p.m. on Friday, July 11th, and ends on 10 p.m. Saturday, July 12th, with lots of activities throughout the day on both of those days, and you can look that up. Also, an article about balloons over Vermilion, about a late bloomer, a pilot who started later in life enjoying the ride, from Danville by Jennifer Bailey. Ed DeVore was in his late 40s when he started working as crew member for the local hot air balloon pilots about 15 years ago, and well into his 50s when he started flying himself 5 years ago. Now 63, he said pilots can range in age from 16 to 80 plus, and it's never too late. "I started this later in life," DeVore said, and while he would have liked to start younger, he's enjoying the flying time now. DeVore's Papa Joy hot air balloon will be one of the approximately 30 taking part in this weekend's Balloon Over Vermilion Festival at Vermilion Regional Airport in Danville. DeVore said he worked on hot air balloon crews for a long time and got hooked on flying. The Westville native, who now lives in Covington, Indiana, spent 22 years at Danville Metal Stamping, then became a manufacturing engineer for GE Aerospace in Terre Haute, Indiana. All of his professional work experience has been in the aviation industry. "I've been around Danville all my life," he said. He also has been involved in shows put on by the Red Mask Player Shows and other theater groups. He said a castmate in a Red Mask theater production said he should try crewing for a hot air balloon. And she was right, DeVore said, about loving the experience. He got his first hands-on experience helping other local balloonists in 2010. DeVore said he'd seen balloons for years, including at the former Balloon Classic events held annually in Danville. "Danville is fortunate to have a number of pilots," he said. He enjoyed being on a crew and lending a hand where needed. "I enjoy being on the ground," he added. He said he encourages anyone interested in hot air balloons who also likes to be outside and likes people to volunteer as a crew member. DeVore said that when he told he'd make a great pilot, and that's exactly what happened, leading him to buy his own hot air balloon and start flying himself. "I just like to crew, and then it gets in your head, and you start to think about it," DeVore said, of becoming a pilot. He learned everything he could while crewing and decided to start down the pilot road, thinking that he could do it. He said he likes the adventure and the adrenaline. "I worked hard at it," he said. He received his pilot certification in 2021. DeVore's balloon got its name and color scheme by combining what gives him joy, his kids and ballooning. The red, white, and blue are national colors and represent his three children. The purple symbolizes his adopted child, and the aqua and green reference his birthstone colors and their birthstone colors. DeVore said Balloons Over Vermilion is something positive for the community. It's positive for everyone. It's a family sport and a family attraction. He said no matter your age, the hot air balloons are beautiful and mesmerizing. He was hoping for nice, calm nights at this year's event and said he loves that Balloons Over Vermilion is community-oriented. "We can get so many people up and close to the balloons," he said, which allows them to ask questions and feel the heat. The event also gets kids involved early when learning about ballooning and gives the students' ambassadors a sense of civic responsibility in being involved in a community event, DeVore added. They come up with interesting designs, he said, of their balloon drawings. Proceeds from both this event and the Festival of Trees benefit community organizations and projects geared toward the youth, he said. DeVore added that he can't do this job, and Balloons Over Vermilion can't happen without all the great volunteers. He recommended that people contact the festival organizers if they're interested in helping out being paired with a pilot. And there's a picture of a beautiful balloon and him, his happy smile as he looks at it. And we're going to stop here with the first half of our News Gazette. I'll be right back to read the second half.